Right, so we are in a series about the seven deadly sins. I've never preached a series on the seven deadly sins before, and it's been an amazing series. We started off talking about lust, then we talked about gluttony, we talked about laziness, and we talked about greed. Last week we talked about wrath or anger, and today we're talking about envy. And this is an interesting one, because I've been talking with people throughout the week saying that, you know, I'm preaching about envy, and to a T, every single person has said, that's not really something that applies to me. I really don't have any envy. I'm pretty content. So it is going to be interesting as we reveal the world of envy. But you guys, the definition of sin we've been talking about is this. Sin is believing that somehow, somewhere, there is something better than God. Here's God, all of his wonder, all of his glory, all of his amazing, well, everything he's blessed me with, but it's just not enough. There's something better than his way, something better than his will, and I've got, at any cost, it seems, to go find it. I've got to go find it, and that's what sin is, okay? And check this out. This is a couple of great theologians thinking about this. Envy, according to Erwin Lutzer, says this: envy is rebellion against God's leading in the lives of his children. It is saying that God has no right to bless someone else more than you. That's what envy is. Leslie Flynn says this: the envious man feels others' fortunes are his misfortunes, their profit, his loss, their blessing, his curse, their health, his illness, their promotion, his demotion, their success, his failure. That's what envy does to you. And then St. Thomas Aquinas, the great Catholic scholar, says this: love rejoices the good fortune of your neighbor, while envy grieves over it. Now, there's test time. There's a little thing, a little list of things that God gave us in the book of Exodus called the Ten Commandments. You know those things that used to hang in classrooms but don't anymore? The Ten Commandments. Test time. I want to see if we as a church can name all Ten Commandments in order. The order is very important. Can we do it? The first commandment is, you shall have no other gods before me. The second one is, no idols. Very good. The third one is... Dang it. Lord's name in vain, exactly. The next one is Sabbath day, exactly. The fifth one is I'm father and mother. The next one is, it's do not murder. It's not murder. Do not murder, okay? That's the seventh one, no adultery. The eighth one, stealing, no stealing. The ninth one is you shall not lie. And the tenth one is? No coveting, exactly. Now, psychologists tell us that when any list that you're given, you're most likely to remember the first and the last thing in a list. Okay, so good public speakers, good communicators will always put the first thing that is of most importance first and the second to most important thing last. Okay, so God, knowing our hearts and knowing the way he wired us up, put the most important commandment first. You shall have no other gods before me. And the tenth commandment, which is the second most important, you shall not covet. Now, why is coveting so bad? Well, isn't coveting what leads to all the others? Think about every murder you think about. Is it usually some kind of coveting that happens there? Think about adultery, coveting what you don't have, stealing what you don't have, coveting. It seems like coveting is what leads to all the other sins. And guys, envy is the state of the heart, and coveting is the action. Okay? Coveting is the action of an envious heart. Okay? But like I said, I was talking about this with some people, and they said, you know, coveting doesn't really apply, or envy doesn't really apply to me. I don't really have any of that. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what. Tomorrow morning, Monday morning, what I want you to do, I want you to go into your place of business, your place of work, and I want you to make a poster of everyone's name and how much they make. Put that up for all to see. And you will have a civil war within 10 minutes. People will be saying, well, I've been here longer than you. Why are you making more than me? You mean you made more than that? Envy is everywhere. This is something that I don't have the guts to do, but I've been thinking about it. You know, go to the funeral home and pretend to be the family lawyer, and then point out, like, and find the deceased kids and say, oh, by the way, he put twice as much in the will for you. And just kind of step back and watch the fighting ensue. If you don't think envy is everywhere, you got your head in the sand, okay? Envy is one of the deadly sins, and it's deadly because of this. It's a statement of how disappointed you are in God. Whoa, disappointed in God? Yes, it is a statement of how disappointed you are in God. Bottom line is, if God had taken care of you the way he's taken care of everyone else, there wouldn't be a problem. You feel that somehow in life God has shortchanged you and he owes you big time. That's what envy says. Okay? Your real problem isn't with the people around you. Get that. And when you have envy problems, it's not with the people around you. Your problem is not with the stuff they have or the successes that they have. God owes you, and you're holding a grudge against him when you have an envious heart. And up until you face a simple but so convicting truth, you will continue to be terrorized by envy, and it will wreak havoc in all of your relationships, every bit of them. Proverbs 14:30 says this, "A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones." Let's take a look at this. This is actually a beautiful verse, and it's oh so true. How many of us, if we took inventory of our lives this morning, look at that, would say, yes, I am at peace. I'm at peace with the world. I'm at peace with my income. I'm at peace with my success. I'm at peace with what I have. I'm at peace in my job. I'm at peace with the success of my kids. I am at peace with my family, in my marriage. I am at peace. Or how many of us, if we're honest, are the second part of that? Our bones are rotting because of envy. We're not content with how our children are doing in sports or in school because of some other kid getting all the glory. We're not content with a car we're driving because another person's nicer, newer car. And we're not content with anything because of what others have. How many of us, if we took inventory this morning, more reflect the second part of that proverb than the first? Well, envy comes from expecting things from the wrong source. Okay? Expecting things from the wrong source. James 4:2, one of my favorite books of the Bible, says this, "You do not have because you don't ask God. When you ask, you don't receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures." Remember, envy isn't between you and another person. It's between you and God. So instead of burning the people around us with all of these demands to meet these needs and everything like that, the book of James tells us to take it straight to the source. If we're consumed with envy, we need to go straight to the source. It's as if God was saying, by the way, this whole thing, this whole state of your heart, this whole envy thing could have been avoided if you would have come to me first, instead of trying to squeeze whatever it is you think you need out of the people around you. Think about it. Who created all these appetites that we can't satisfy? Is it your sister? Is it your spouse? Your employer? Your neighbor? No. God created all those. And so this is what we do. If we find ourselves consumed with envy, if we see that this is a problem within us, we take our desires right to God without any shame or any embarrassment. Okay? If you look at Luke 15, the story of the prodigal son, it's a famous story. And if you know the story, it goes like this. A man has two sons. The older one is very diligent and very dutiful. The younger one's kind of a loser and doesn't really like to work. So he takes his half of the inheritance and he goes to a foreign land. Then he blows all the old man's money, it says, in wild living. Then the credit card bills start coming in, and the problems start coming in. He starts to get a little hungry and everything like that. And so he starts to suffer, and then he decides to go back and face the old man with what he's done. So he comes back, and the father embraces him and throws open the doors of his house and throws a big party for him. Okay, you guys know the story. Well, the older brother, if you pick up here in verse 25, "Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. And so he called one of his servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother's come back,' he replied, 'and your father's killed the fatted calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him, but he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. When the son of yours who squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him.'" Okay, now the older brother gets a bad rap in this story for good reason. I mean, he's very judgmental and everything like that. But here's the thing. He deals with his envy in the right way. He doesn't go bash the brother. He doesn't find a bunch of his friends and bash the brother. What's he do? He takes his complaint straight to the father. He takes it straight to the Father, which is exactly what we should do. And his complaints basically boil down to two things. Complaint number one is, I've been slaving for you, and you have not rewarded me at all. This is a very common complaint within the body of Christ, within Christians. I've been doing everything right, God. I've been trying to follow you. I've been trying to be faithful in my marriage. I've been trying to be honest. I've been trying to, you're doing the best that I can. I haven't disobeyed your orders. And yet, it's all the people, it's the backstabbers that are getting all the breaks. It's the liars that are getting ahead. There are people that are undermining me. And those are the ones, God, this isn't fair. That's complaint number one that we see the older brother making. It's very, very common from an envious heart. The second complaint is this: he doesn't deserve what he's getting from you. If you notice, he said, you killed a fatted calf from me. He doesn't deserve this. And did you also catch the assumption in the second complaint? Catch the assumption. He squandered your property with prostitutes. Now, does the older brother know that? Was he there watching him? No, he doesn't know that. He makes an assumption, and that assumption feeds his envy. How many of us have made assumptions? We're feeling envious, and we're complaining to God about people, about assumptions we don't know are true. That's exactly what happens out of an envious heart. We make assumptions of what these other people have done and that they don't deserve God's favor, okay? So how does the father react, though? Does he tell his son to shut up, quit whining, suck it up, buttercup? Does he say that? No, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say that at all. He listens. He realizes that his son is hurting, that his son feels slighted, that this is important to his son no matter how wrong he is. He realizes it's important to his son, and therefore, because he loves the son, it's important to the father. Do you understand that? No matter how trite or how awful or how wrong you are in your complaints, that they mean something to God because they mean something to you. And so we take our problems straight to the father, not to other people. Guys, this is very liberating for me because these complaints are a big deal for me. I hate whining. I hate complaining, and I don't deal with them well. And when I have them within me, I tend to just kind of ignore them or push them down. I start my prayers off like, well, God, I know I shouldn't feel this way, but. Or I know that I should be more mature than this, but. Or I know in the grand scheme of things, this really isn't that big a deal, but. And none of that is necessary. Because it's God we're talking to. Why? Because it's important to you, it's important to him. Every concern's important to him because you are important to him. Finances, success, appearance, children, etc. Keep bringing it to the Father and bringing it to the Father and bringing it to the Father until you have the peace that you need. Okay? It's easier, I have to make an admission, it's easier for me to own my anger than it is my envy. Okay? It's a lot easier. I can make a good case for my anger, but the second I start to talk about envy and being envious, I can sound pretty middle schoolish with no disrespect intent towards middle schoolers. So I don't talk about it, but it's there. It's there every time I hear of a church plant that's within 1 year is larger than our church. It's there when I see a kid who's a better athlete or better student than my kids. It's there when I see a guy with a normal-sized nose. It's there when I see someone with a car that's, well, less than 14 years old. You know, it's there when I see people who actually have cars that are different, not three of the same car, same year, same color. I mean, it's there. It is there. And that stuff may sound harmless, but it's not. Envy is so dangerous, you guys. It is so dangerous. It's dangerous because it shapes our attitude towards people. And you can't love someone that you're envious towards. Okay, so conquering envy starts with this admission. I would love for people at Catalyst Christian Church this morning to make this admission right here. The reason I resent, take this to God, the reason I resent him or her has nothing to do with him or her. Just like last week, the problem is that I'm not getting what I want. I want people to say that this morning. That's my problem, is I'm not getting what I want. And then, when you make that admission, take your old car, your old TV, your small house, your hand-me-down clothes, your muffin top, your black and white TV, your huge nose, your dead-end job, your poor health, your less than stellar ACT scores to the only one who can do anything about it, and that's God. Take it to him. All your frustrations, all your hurt, all your desires, all your wants, all your needs, everything. Go ahead and tell him how unhappy you are with him. That he's shortchanged you. Tell him that. Why? Because he's God and he can take it. He knows how you're feeling. He already knows that. He's just waiting for you to be honest enough to be able to approach him on that. He can take it. He's God. And then to sum it all up, after you've launched your whole big deal, then do this. Say, Lord, I think you owe me. Do that. Because that's what's going on in our hearts, guys. That's it. And God may be waiting for some honesty from us. And when you can reach that point, when you can actually bring that up to our Heavenly Father, you're almost at a breakthrough. Almost at a breakthrough. Then you realize God doesn't owe you anything. We owe Him everything, including an apology. God's unhindered acceptance of us is why we can do that without fear of retribution, because His grace is bigger than our complaints. But guys, I'm telling you, more than any other deadly sin, hear this, envy is the canary in the coal mine for how your relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ is. Envy, more than any other sin, will tell you how things are between you and God. That's why it's such a deadly sin. All right? And when you're ready to deal with your envy, after you've taken it straight to God, then we move to the one thing. After we've emptied the envy out of our hearts, we move to the one thing that will be so freeing and so liberating and so wonderful that you can't believe you haven't been doing this all along. This is the cure to envy. Once you poured out all your envy, we replace it with celebration. Celebration. Celebrate the successes of people instead of envying them. This is the cure. This is it. This is the antidote. To ensure freedom, you've got to celebrate the success, the size, the stuff of all the people that you envy. You need to go out of your way to verbally express congratulations over their accomplishments. It must become a habit. Celebration is the most freeing and liberating thing that you will ever do as a human being. Celebrating the successes of others, not just your own. I have told you guys many times from this stage how much I hate debt. I hate debt. I hate credit card debt. I hate car loans. I hate student loans. And the thing I really hate is mortgage debt. And I've made it very, very clear that, you know, we are on a plan to get out from under our mortgage, to pay it off as fast as possible. We're doing what Dave Ramsey calls getting gazelle intense about. I mean, we're sending every extra penny towards paying off our mortgage. I hate our mortgage. I hate it. Every statement I get, even though the number keeps decreasing that we owe, it's like a fist in the face of how much we owe, and I hate it with a passion. You guys understand? Okay? Communicating here how much I hate the mortgage, okay? As a matter of fact, according to our plan, in 60 months, 5 years from this month, March, we will be completely debt-free from our mortgage. I'll be 46 years old and never, ever, 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 ever make a mortgage payment again. You guys feel me? How passionate I am about this? Well, a couple months ago, I got a text message from my brother, and it said, "Hey, just paid off the mortgage." Really? Congratulations. And I felt this terrible emotion rising up within me. I was envious. He's never going to have to make a mortgage payment again. He just got a huge raise, didn't he? Without working another minute, he gets to keep that much more of his income. And why don't I? You see how this works? I realized that within me, I saw my brother's good fortune as my failure, his success to my detriment. That's the feeling that I'm confessing in front of you. That's the feeling that started rising up within me. And guys, I had to learn how, I had to deal with this because it was ugly. There's ugliness in here. Because it was a goal I wanted to accomplish, and someone else got there in front of me, and I got so envious. And it was even worse when that next mortgage payment came in. I'm still paying this, and he's not. So you know what you do? You get out your text message, and you're like, "No, I can't send that. No, I can't send that." You know that? No, actually, I just prayed, and I said, "Lord, help me to celebrate this." And so I sent him a message, said, "Man, I am so happy for you. I am so ecstatic for you. I can't wait to be there myself. And in 5 years, when I'm this way, I want you to celebrate with me too." That's what I said. See, guys, his success was not my failure. He did not succeed to my detriment. What did his paying off his mortgage have to do with my plan? Nothing, absolutely nothing. Therefore, I need to celebrate with him. You know, his being mortgage free didn't have anything to do with my plan. Guys, this was time to celebrate the good fortune of others. And when I began to celebrate his good fortune, this amazing weight was just lifted off of my shoulders and out of my heart. And I realized how wonderful it is to celebrate the good fortunes of others and what type of an amazing human being that actually turns you into. Those of you guys that don't know, my dad and I do prison ministry on Tuesday mornings. We teach fatherhood skills, and we're in the Hope Center program there at the drug recovery pod there. And every now and then on a Tuesday, we'll walk in and everybody will be lined up. And we know what they're doing. It's a graduation. They're graduating from the program. That means that somebody is getting out of jail. Somebody's getting their freedom back. Okay? And you talk about a time for envy. A guy who's going to be walking out and being free and they're stuck in jail. You talk about a time for envy. And what is amazing is watching these guys just embrace these, you know, doing the big group hug. And, man, I'm so happy for you. Don't ever come back here again. Man, they're embracing. They're happy. They're almost tears of joy as somebody gets out and gets their freedom. It is amazing to watch. And I'm telling you, people, if they can do it, over something as huge as your freedom, getting your freedom back, getting out of jail. If they can celebrate that, we can too. We can celebrate the good fortunes of others. And guys, and so you look at me and say, okay, well, what if I do that? And what if I don't mean it? What if I'm just saying these words, but inside I'm still envious? I'm still, you know, am I supposed to celebrate their success if I just don't feel like it? Well, the answer is yeah. Yeah. If you know, If the person looks better in the dress, ladies, if they look better in the dress than you, then say it. It's true. You know, did your brother-in-law have a nicer car than you? Tell him so. You know, did your business partner do better on a presentation than you? Tell him so. You're not being insincere. You're being honest. And what Jesus says, you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Truth has a wonderful way of setting us free. Go ahead and say it. Okay? However, these things are true, and you can't bring yourself to say them, then you've got a problem. You've got an envy problem. I read an excellent article in the Huffington Post. I admit it. There was actually a good article there. Once. Okay? It's called Raising a Kind Daughter. It's amazing. Check this out. I'm going to read it in part. The writer writes, "When my daughter Ella was in fourth grade, she got in the car one day after school and announced her plan to run for student council. At her school, each class has a representative, and I was thrilled that she planned to put her name in the hat. Even if she didn't win, it'd be a good experience. She told me almost every girl in her class was running, and as well as one or two boys. As kindly as possible, I mentioned the boys might have an advantage because the girls' votes could be split among all the girls, as that can happen in elections. I told Ella I was proud of her for putting herself out there, and she'd make a great representative if elected. Next day after school, Ella mentioned a dilemma that she and her friend Annie had figured out. On Friday, all candidates had to give a speech. Since our family's going to the beach Friday, Ella wouldn't be there to give hers. Get this. But Annie had a great idea, Ella said, referencing her best friend. She suggested that I do a video speech, and she'll play it for everyone. I was very touched by the suggestion from Annie. Why? Because Annie was running against Ella for student council representative. Yet instead of treating Ella like a competitor, she treated her like a friend. Ella's teacher agreed to the video speech, and so we made it and sent it in. I didn't think much more about the election until Friday about 3 p.m., when I was soaking up an ocean wave on the Gulf Coast and received an email from Ella's teacher. She had great news. Ella had won the election. Her classmates had voted her onto the student council. Our family hugged and congratulated Ella. I could tell by the shy smile on her face what her peers' vote of confidence meant to her. About 10 minutes later, my cell phone rang. It was Annie's mom. Now get this. "We are so thrilled about Ella," she said, her voice joyful and triumphant. "It was the first thing Annie told me when she got in the car. She's so excited. We couldn't be happier if it had happened to her." The phone call didn't surprise me, the writer writes, because that was typical for this family. What caught me off guard was the timing of the call. These were 10-year-olds, after all, and 10-year-old emotions can be fragile. Their automatic instinct isn't always happiness for someone else who got something they wanted too. Had the tables been turned, I'm not sure the call would have happened so quickly. We may have had to work through a little disappointment, even for a minute, before focusing on our friend. But to Annie and her mom, a victory for Annie's best friend was a victory for Annie. Wow. A win for one was a win for both. If you ask me, that's the perfect illustration of true friendship. It's how it should work at every level. And she writes this, all four of my girls have found friends similar to Annie. While no friendship is perfect, I've been surprised by some of the kindness I've seen at young ages. They know how to look for a friend. They get it. I can tell you what their kind friends all have in common. Are you ready for this, people? Catalyst, are you ready for what all these kind friends have in common? Kind mothers. Time and time again, I become friends with the moms I meet through my children's beloved friends because they are good souls. I don't think it's a coincidence their children are too. Kindness among young girls doesn't start on the playground or the locker room. It starts at home. Most notably, it starts with kind mothers raising kind daughters. Our girls see how we treat our friends. They also know how we treat their friends. If we treat their friends as competitors, our daughters will too. If we love their friends like we love our own children, they're more likely to see them as sisters and part of the family. Keep in mind, it wasn't just Annie cheering on Ella who won student council. It was Annie's mom cheering her on. She was just as enthusiastic. Can I tell you what that meant to me? Can you imagine the trust that added to our relationship? Quite honestly, she writes, I think it's rare for both a mother and a daughter to instinctively rejoice as these two did. Then again, maybe it just proves the point. We moms rub off on our girls. Over time, our way of thinking becomes their way of thinking. If we want to raise kind daughters, we need to start by being kind mothers. That mom taught her daughter how to celebrate the successes of others. There was no envy in that family. That's good stuff. That's good, good, good stuff. See, guys, expressing truth is a great way of healing our hearts. It's much easier to behave ourselves in a new way of thinking than to think ourselves in a new way of behaving. So start celebrating who in your life needs to be celebrated. Who is doing well in life, even better than you? Who is it? Celebrate them. Who needs a pat on the back, a phone call, a hug, instead of being critical of their success? What if you made it a habit to publicly celebrate the successes of others? This is a habit that truly changes everything. You will find so much liberation, so much joy, so much satisfaction in celebrating the successes of others. That is the cure for envy. Remember, envy rots the bones. It kills you. It kills your joy. It's like a wet blanket on everything that you do. Envy destroys you. Celebration liberates you. We aren't competing here, people. 6 feet of earth make all men and women equal. Right? To get rid of the sin of envy, begin celebrating, celebrating, celebrating. Become a person, become a family, become a church of celebration where we do nothing but celebrate the success of others. Right? You'll find it to be the most liberating, joy-filled thing in the world. Take all your complaints, all your issues straight to God. Take them to God. Let them out. Completely let them out. Receive His wonderful grace, and with all of that envy gone from your heart, fill it with celebration. Invite the band to come on back up as they're going to lead us in worship some more. Celebration of the successes and the good fortunes of others, the victories of others, the people you used to see as your competition, but now you don't. People whose good fortunes, successes used to keep you up at night, but now they're just a cause for wonder and amazement and congratulations. You'll find yourself looking for things to celebrate, looking for things to celebrate, to congratulate, looking for things to say that's awesome about. And guys, when you have that kind of mindset, you are a very, very decent sort of person to be around. Very decent. Matter of fact, you might even make a few friends that way. Do you see how wonderful life would be if this was us each and every day? I want everyone right now to close their eyes. And I want you to think. I want you to think about the person that needs to be celebrated. Take all your envy to God, pour it out on Him, and then fill your life with that celebration. And go out from this place as a different person. Guys, we're going to celebrate. I asked the worship team to do several songs after the message because, guys, I just want to celebrate. I want to celebrate God's goodness. I want to celebrate the goodness and the successes and the victories and everything like that. So we're going to worship. We're going to worship our hearts out. We're just going to celebrate as a church before the Lord. I invite you to stand up and let's worship Him together.